So, I'll begin by talking about a Hebrew legend. There was a great angel Lucifer who revolted against God and became Satan, and he was going to lead his armies against the armies of God. And so you can imagine this great war scene in heaven, you know, Satan in charge of his armies, all the demons that fell with him, and then sort of the head angel leading out this army of angels. And the angel cried out a challenge to Satan: "Who is like God?" In other words, who are you to set yourself up as a rival to God or as an equal to God? And that question, "Who is like God?" in Hebrew, Mishael, became the name of the angel, Michael. And that being is known as Michael the Archangel. And so Michael the Archangel is on my mind because Saturday was the feast of Michael the Archangel. It's called Michaelmas. It's not a very familiar term to us if you're familiar with the English academic system. Often the autumn quarter is called the Michaelmas term because it starts around this time of year. And it's funny with saint days, with human saints, they usually occur on, they're usually the anniversary of the death of the saint or some significant event in the life of the saint. But of course, with a completely non-human being, Michael the Archangel, where do you put a saint day? Well, they chose to put it right after the vernal equinox. And the idea is that he would stand as this kind of protector as we entered the dark time of the year. And so I'm not necessarily going to ask you to believe literally in the existence of any angels, but one way to think about Michael the Archangel is you could think of it as the archetype of the place in us that is able to offer us protection because it knows the truth of who we are. And so it got me thinking a little bit about this whole connection between protection and knowing the truth and what's going on there, actually. You know, protection and the sacred, or protection and, you know, sacred being an awfully big word, the protection and what's most important in life, something like that. And certainly there are many stories in this culture about how you can protect yourself, you know. One of the stories is that money can protect you. And for some people, money is the most important thing in life, you know. And it's funny because, of course, money can buy you a few conveniences and it can give you some sort of feeling of security, perhaps if you live in a gated community and have the newest alarm system and all that. But of course, money can't protect you from heartaches. It can't protect you from all kinds of emotional sufferings and shocks. Some people would say that the most important thing is love, either familial love or romantic love. And of course, there's a lot of joy in that. And of course, there's ways that families certainly can provide a kind of protective influence to some extent. And at the same time, family and certainly romance are also sources of tremendous pain and suffering. And that's the nature of it. We're not necessarily getting, you know, any kind of ironclad protection there. We're getting exposed to life, and in some sense getting exposed to life in its rawest form. And so certainly one thing is clear, that there's really no such thing as protection from the pain of life. Life is painful. Life is pleasurable. Life is painful. This world has as much pleasure and as much pain as we can possibly bear, and even more than that. there's one, you know, one way that people protect themselves is by numbing themselves out, trying to not feel. And of course, when you do that, you might protect yourself from some of the minor upsets in life, but in shutting out the minor upsets of life, you're also shutting out all the joy, and you're creating the pain of disconnection, which is sort of a low-level ongoing pain. And living that way doesn't really protect you from the big pains of life anyway. It's kind of a game, as if you can hide from life. And there's even ways that attaching to ideas of the spiritual can be dangerous, can cause pain. I think it's one very conventional story that if I'm a good person and I do good things, then good things will happen to me, you know? And it might be that if I do good things, God is going to take care of me, or if I do good things and I'm going to build up good karma and look at all the good I'm doing, so all my karma is going to protect me, you know, that sort of thing. And then, of course, eventually life happens in some painful way, and it can be very disillusioning for people. Like, what happened to my guarantee, you know? I was doing all these good things. Of course, from the perspective of Buddhism, we don't do good things to get something. I don't act with compassion because I'm trying to earn something or achieve something. I act with compassion because compassion is my true nature. And so the value of it is in how it connects me to myself, not in how it protects me or guarantees something else or anything like that. At another level, people can have fixed ideas about what God is, or what Buddha is, or what Buddhism is. And then it may be something external, or it may be something internal, that disrupts those ideas. Sometimes the first step in a spiritual awakening is losing whatever conception of spirituality you had up until that point. There's this great quote by Carl Jung that the primary purpose of organized religion is to protect people from having a genuine spiritual experience. And really, ultimately, the truth of the sacred, now whether we want to call it a God or Buddha nature or Tao, is beyond all categories of knowledge and thought. It is beyond anything that we can put into words, anything that our minds can understand. It's funny, this is pretty much the only idea that is explicitly agreed upon by all religions on earth, that whatever we're going to call the sacred, it's beyond what we can know. And so in many ways this circles back to Buddhism, that in some ways what protects us is disattachment. Disattachment is not disengagement. Disattachment is receiving the world incredibly sensitively, with an open heart, with vulnerability, and yet not trying to manipulate and control outcomes. Another powerful way to think about protection, it's a very simple idea that forms the kind of nucleus of the Course in Miracles. And it says very simply, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Now, when you think about that, it doesn't make sense at first, because, of course, you know, I could say, well, my life is real and my life could be threatened, you know. I could be run over by the chicken truck tomorrow or something. But what's real is me existing in this moment. What's real is the connection we have in this moment. Now, what may happen tomorrow doesn't change what's real right now. You know, we like to reify things as if there is this concrete, continuous existing thing called Mike that exists from one day to the next. And really what there are just experiences we have, experiences of one present moment to the next. So I prepared a quote sheet tonight, as I often do. I used to be a high school teacher, so I always have handouts. The first quote is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I'm not going to read the whole passage, but it's this passage on this idea from the Upanishads, neti neti, which means, it's Sanskrit for not this, not this. The whole idea that whatever your mind can conceive, the nature of Brahma, the nature of, you might call it cosmic consciousness, is something beyond all words, something beyond all conception. So anything I can think, it's not this, it's not this. Then I quoted the Course in Miracles. Then there's this great quote from Rumi. Pretend the universe is rigged in your favor. I love that one. And what I love about that is, there's no way to know that it is, but there's no way to know that it isn't, you know? And so it's almost like you just have better outcomes if you act as if it is. From Ralph Waldo Emerson, the best lightning rod for your protection is your own spine. Very proper New England kind of pull yourself up by your bootstraps thing there. And then contrast that with Rilke. Ultimately, it is upon your vulnerability that you depend. From the great master Ajahn Chah, if you hold on to any expectation, you miss the wisdom. It is impermanent. Be the one who knows, the witness to it all. This is how trust grows. From Maya Angelou, this very touching one, I am never proud to participate in violence, yet I know that each one of us must care enough for ourselves that we can be ready and able to come to our own defense when and wherever needed. Very powerful. From Jack Kornfield, we are part of the vast plan of life. When individual loss strikes, or when there is a communal trauma, it is not a mistake. We have what it takes to endure it with courage. We can survive and go strong, like the wild trees on the mountain ridges that have weathered storms and become beautiful. With trust, we can plant our seeds, tend to them, and discover that although it is not possible to control the world, we can always give care for the garden of our lives. And in fact, I'm just going to give a plug for that book. This is the book, No Time Like the Present. It's a new book by Jack Kornfield, and it really is an extraordinary book. I'm reading it right now. If you've never read Jack Kornfield, read Jack Kornfield. He's amazing. From a scientist, Robin Wall Kimmerer, a Kayan elder, my acquaintance, once told me that the best way to find something out is not to go looking for it. This is a hard concept for a scientist, but he said to watch out of the corner of your eye, open to possibility, and what you seek will be revealed. The revelation of suddenly seeing what I was blind to almost a moment before is a sublime experience for me. I can revisit those moments and still feel a surge of expansion. The boundary between my world and the world of another being get pushed back with sudden clarity, an experience both humbling and joyful. Henry Cloud says, appropriate boundaries don't control, attack, or hurt anyone. They simply prevent your treasures from being taken at the wrong time. Saying no to adults who are responsible for getting their own needs met may cause some discomfort, but it doesn't cause injury. That's a good one to remember. Very simple one that speaks at many levels. The road itself tells us far more than signs do. This long one from Veronica Tagulova. These times are hard, but I won't walk away jaded, dark, or different. I feel. I cry to heal. If you saw me in those moments, you might think I was a mess. But I don't call it a mess. I call it strength. Real strength isn't about building walls. Real strength is about staying open no matter what. It's about taking life with all the pleasure that fades and all the pain that sticks around for too long, and not shutting down, not closing off, not building up those walls. Resilience isn't hard, impenetrable iron. Resilience is flexible, soft, and warm. Stay strong. The real kind of strong. Don't let your automatic mind reflexes make you jump away from pain and toward pleasure. Make choices, see clearly, and never, ever stop feeling. Don't go numb. The world, even with all its horrors, is too beautiful to miss. This African writer, whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce, when a protector leaves you, it looks like the end of the world, but you gradually learn to walk by your own feet. From Kimberly Roth, anger is a legitimate feeling, often one designed for self-protection. And in fact, part of really feeling powerful and feeling safe is befriending one's own anger and feeling comfortable with one's own anger. It's a human feeling. And then very simply, great experiences are built on the foundation of bad experiences.